The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest. I'm Sharmila Ganesan together with Dashran Johan. So previously, a lawyer and an activist challenged the legality of the May 18th parliamentary sitting, and it has now been fixed for hearing in the High Court on the 30th of July. So we discuss what the challenge is about and what could potentially happen if the court finds that the May 18th sitting was unconstitutional.
Yep, and if you'd like to send us your thoughts on this topic, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Right, so let's jump in. A few weeks ago, on the 18th of May, the first parliamentary meeting for the year was held. And the meeting was initially scheduled to take place from March 9th to April 16th, but was postponed to May 18th after the collapse of the Pakatan Harapan government and the formation of the Perikatan National Government.
However, the announcement and the subsequent parliamentary sitting has received criticisms from various parties, including opposition party leaders. For starters, a parliamentary sitting phase, which usually takes place over the course of 2 weeks to a month, was reduced by Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin to merely half a day. On top of that, the sitting only had the Yang di-Pertuan Agong's address, without any debates or discussions on policies and laws. Perikatan Nasional cited the COVID-19 pandemic as the reason for holding such an unorthodox parliamentary meeting.
So based on the edge markets on May 15th, following the announcement of the parliamentary sitting, lawyer R. Kengadharan and social activist D. Arumugam sought a court declaration that the one-day Dewan Rakyat sitting is unconstitutional. And they named the Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin and Dewan Rakyat Speaker Tan Sri Muhammad Arif Muhammad Yusof as defendants in the application that was filed at the High Court.
Yeah. So the duo argued that the May 18 parliamentary sitting wasn't in accordance to the federal constitution, and also it also violates the standing orders, hence should be rendered invalid. So here's what they said. A parliamentary sitting with only the royal address would not fulfill Article 55, Clause 1 of the Federal Constitution, and no other urgent matters would be discussed as required under Order 14, Clause 1. So they said this would result in the first sitting in 2020 to be illusory, as no other urgent matters would be discussed as required under Order 14, Clause 1.
So fast forward to yesterday, right? And the appeal brought about by R. Kengadharan and Arumugam to invalidate the May 18 parliamentary meeting has been fixed for hearing in the High Court for July 30th.
But what exactly does all of this mean? And what will happen if the court indeed finds the May 18 parliamentary sitting to be invalid? So to help us make sense of the matter, we have on the line constitutional lawyer Surendra Anand. So Suren, what does our federal constitution have to say with regard to how often parliament needs to sit?
So as far as the federal constitution is concerned, it provides for the long-term lifeline of parliament. So as you know, parliament usually convenes after the general elections. And from that first date of sitting after the election, parliament has a long-term lifeline of 5 years, by which then you need to have the next general elections. So that's the first timeline that you have under the constitution. The second timeline that you have is what you call a timeline between each session of parliament. So parliament cannot have a lapse of more than 6 months after it was last prorogued for its next sitting. So if you impose this or apply this on the example that's going on right now, I believe parliament was last prorogued sometime in December, I believe. Was it 19 December? I'm not sure of the exact
date. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so then you have 6 months from that date for parliament to sit next. That's pretty much the two timelines that you have in the constitution.
So what exactly needs to happen during these parliamentary sittings for it to be considered official and in accordance with the constitution?
So the constitution doesn't actually define what a sitting or a session or a meeting is. The constitution merely says that the Yang di-Pertuan Agong has to summon parliament from time to time, and you can't allow for a time lapse of more than 6 months between sittings. Sittings are, however, defined in the standing orders. Meetings are also defined there. The issue is, it does not specifically say what needs to happen for it to constitute a sitting or a meeting. So I suppose there are two ways to look at it. One way is to look at it literally, in which case, as long as Parliament meets, even if it's for just one day or one business item, that constitutes the meeting. Another view that's right now being articulated, argued in court is that, look, that there are certain businesses that are provided for under the standing orders, which obviously includes the introduction of bills by the government, questions towards ministers, petitions, private motions by opposition MPs, et cetera, which requires debate and so on. So for it to actually be a meaningful sitting or meeting, all these businesses have to take place. So that would be more of a purposive reading of the standing orders.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the one-day sitting of Dewan Rakyat was, in fact, in accordance with Article 55, Clause 1 of the Federal Constitution, right? Could you help explain this article and what it means and whether the law was obeyed, if not the spirit of the law?
And I guess if you read the law in a literal sense, then you can say, yeah, it was obeyed. They just sit on the 18th of May. They were present. They sat, even though for a short while, and they left. But I think the more important question to ask is, was it, as you said, complied with in spirit? And I think the answer, in my view, is no, for simple two reasons. Number one, the Constitution also requires that the Cabinet or the government be accountable to Parliament. That's a mandatory requirement. And that's one of the most significant roles of Parliament, to hold the government accountable. This is done through question and answers, through private member motions, etc. So a no-confidence vote, for example, is one form of accountability. So if you're going to stop that from happening or impede the business of Parliament and only allow for a speech by the YDPA, to me, you're avoiding your responsibility to be accountable to Parliament. And that's a first violation for me. The second violation is that, as I said, a critical role of Parliament, besides holding the government accountable, is also obviously to pass laws, even be it by the opposition MPs, and to discuss important matters. And I think we are at a period with COVID and the MCO that there are a lot of important things going on and a lot of significant matters that needs to be addressed, which only Parliament can address. So by having a one-day sitting and by restricting the business that can be done, you're effectively curtailing or stifling the proper functioning of Parliament in a parliamentary democracy. So to me, that's a second big issue, which goes really to the spirit and roots of the Constitution. So in that sense, I would say that the one-day sitting was not in accordance with the Constitution.
So on top of Article 55.1, there's also Order 14.1. What exactly is Order 14.1 and what is its significance?
Yeah, so Order 14.1 basically lists down the various businesses that's conducted in Parliament, and it is essentially arranged in accordance with a priority. So you have the entry of the King, the King's speech, petitions by the government, government businesses like bills by the government, and usually government business takes precedence, and only towards the end of Order 14 will you have, for example, private member bills. So essentially, Order 14 lists on all the various businesses that happens in Parliament. And what you saw with the 18 May sitting is that it's only restricted to one single business, which is the entry and the speech by the King. So that's also another issue, because at the end of the day, it's for really Parliament or the Speaker to regulate and decide what business is to be conducted. It's not really for the Prime Minister to restrict what can and cannot be done in the Parliament before Parliament even sits. So to me, that was another problem with the 18 May sitting. You had the Prime Minister as the leader of the House instructing the Speaker or the Secretary of the House to issue a notice saying, look, we're sitting for one day and only this is going to happen. Everything else is not going to happen. To me, that was problematic, because Order 14 says that there are a lot of other things that can and should be done. And if at all you're going to stop that from being done or adjourn it, what you normally do is during Parliament itself, a minister will stand up and say, I'm moving a motion to adjourn the House, or I'm moving a motion to limit the business of the House. So what you saw happening with the 18 May sitting was, in my view, an interference with parliamentary business by...
Okay, but given that Perikatan came into power in the midst of the pandemic, and then we also had a lockdown, could it be argued that this was a viable solution to the situation?
I think it works in the reverse, actually. I think it was the very reason of why, or rather the fact that they came into power midstream without being elected was more of a reason to have a proper sitting of parliament. Significantly where the no-confidence vote could have been put through. So usually, in the conventional sense, you appoint the Prime Minister after an election. And historically, in our country, it's always been a very clear decision to be made by the Yang Dipertuan Agong, where you have a coalition which gets a simple majority and the leader of the coalition would just get appointed as Prime Minister. So in essence, there was no uncertainty as to who really had the majority. But when you had this scenario that happened, the Sheraton move and what happened after that, for the first time, we had a scenario where it was really unclear as to which individual had majority support. So the YDP obviously exercised his discretion objectively, but it's important that he only appointed someone whom, in his view, is likely to command, the key word being likely. So in a situation where, in fact, we don't know who clearly holds the majority, the proper forum to test that is parliament. So if you have a hung parliament, for example, if the king appoints someone he's not sure but it's likely, where you actually test the judgment is in parliament by way of a no confidence vote. So the fact that the CN government came in the way they did, I think gives more reason for parliament to be convened in full, so that the confidence factor of the Prime Minister can be put to test, because I think that's important and that has to be decided first before anything else.
So lawyer R. Kengadharan and activist D. Arumugam claim that the May 18 proceedings did not come within the meaning of a sitting, meeting or session under Order 98 of the Standing Orders. Could you help unpack what they meant by that?
I've not had a look at the court papers, but I'm just guessing or assuming that, as we discussed earlier, if you read the definitions in Order 98, literally, they don't impose any requirement as to what needs to be done in a sitting or a meeting. So I guess if you read it literally, then the sitting on 18 May would have complied with that order. But I think what they're trying to advance is more of a purposeless reading of Order 98, and that it has to be read together with Order 14, because Order 14 prescribes all the businesses of Parliament which has to be conducted in a sitting or a meeting. And if you're going to restrict it to merely one item, and even that without a debate, then I suppose there is really no meaningful sitting within the meaning of Order 98. But I think it's a question of interpretation and two different views on how do you interpret the standing orders with the Constitution.
Okay. So if we go by the assumption that the court rules the May 18 sitting null, what does the next when does the next parliamentary sitting need to take place? And what happens if it doesn't? Are we looking at a parliament that's going to be dissolved? Will there be another general election?
Yeah, so that's the thing. Then it has to take place 6 months from December 19th, which would be, I think June 19th, I suppose.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, then you're going to have an issue, because then assuming that this was decided post-June 19th, then, you know, the question of 6 months becomes academic. So it would be a very tricky situation, I suppose, which the court will have to face in deciding whether or not that sitting is a nullity to begin with. I don't think Parliament will dissolve in itself. The dissolution of Parliament can only happen in certain specific scenarios. That is an automatic dissolution after 5 years, or if you have a call for elections, or if the Prime Minister loses confidence and he requests that Parliament be dissolved and the YDP agrees to do it. But I don't think there will be an automatic dissolution. I suppose one way is to immediately convene Parliament, but then you're stuck with the fact that the rules, the standing orders requires like 21-day notice, etc. So, as I say, I mean, it would be a very tricky scenario. I suppose directions could come from the court to convene parliament as soon as possible. There's a possibility that one could abridge time by way of a direction of a court, but I'm really not sure that that's legally possible.
Okay, thank you, Suren. That was constitutional lawyer Surendra Anand. So I'd like to ask something. So the Prime Minister and Perikatan Nasional, as we mentioned earlier, cited COVID-19 as the reason to have a half-day parliamentary sitting. But here's the thing, even during the first phase of the MCO, essential services were still allowed to operate, of course, with, you know, strict guidelines and SOPs. Mm. So we're talking water, you know, electricity, broadcast media, etc. So shouldn't a parliamentary sitting, which generally sees our nation's leaders meet, discuss and debate the policies and laws concerning education, minority struggles, domestic violence, health crisis that's currently going on, the economic recession that, you know, that's on the horizon, and the validity of the very government itself, among other topics, be considered essential services?
So that's an excellent question, Dashran. And, you know, adding to that, the thing that struck me the most when Suren was speaking also was this idea of confidence, right? Because the MCO and the pandemic happened so close to after Perikatan Nasional's taking over of the government, whether or not you know, whichever side of the fence you are, in terms of whether that's the government you want, what I want is to be assured that we have a government in place that I can trust, that are doing their job well. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, all those issues that you just mentioned, there is some sense that we might want our leaders to put that confidence in us.
Right.
And sitting for parliament is an essential part of making that happen. I'm very interested to see where this goes. And if anybody else has thoughts or opinions that you'd like to share with us, do tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can drop us a message on Facebook. We are BFM The Bigger Picture. And if you've missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my/dailydigest. On the BFM app or on Spotify. That's it for the Daily Digest today. But coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, I will be speaking to Dato' Ramli Ibrahim, who is, of course, a dancer, a choreographer, and the founder of the Sutra Foundation. And we will be talking about some potential ways forward for the arts industry to regroup, maybe rethink the ways that things have been done following both the COVID-19 pandemic as well as the entry of a new government for us. So that's it from us, but do stay tuned for that. After the 3 o'clock news, we'll leave you now with Come Together by the Beatles, BFM 89.9.